You're tuned to 103.5 WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro's 100-watt wonder. Listener-supported community radio.
So, do you hear me?
You're listening to your community radio station, 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
Hello, everybody. This is Paul, and this is another edition of WCOM Touchstones, your local radio station that deals specifically in religion in the triangle and triad. Today, we have a special edition of the show, and my guest is Marie White, a tarot artist. Let's say something, Marie, so I know you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me, Paul.
Yeah, great. And what we're going to talk about is, this is a special edition. We're not going to be talking about religious stuff that we normally talk about, but the stuff we're talking about is sort of quasi-religion, or it could be, it's definitely religious for some people, and we'll talk about some of the range of that. But both Marie and I, this last weekend, a long weekend, were at an annual event, which is the Reader's Studio, which is a convocation, slightly international, definitely American and Canadian, and to some degree we get a few people from across the pond, and even had a person in from South Africa, who represents the tarot community, tarot reading community. These are tarot readers from all over the country and the world, gathering together to once a year for a long weekend in which they have presentations to actually become better tarot readers. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk about that experience of what it's like, the sense of immersion, what are some of the things we learned about tarot, and I guess other aspects of the Reader Studios was this last year, which was this is the Reader Studio. I think this is the sixth one they had. I think that's what they said, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and it was when I went last year in 07, and then it was there was 74 people at the Reader Studio. This year, it had almost doubled. It was almost 150 people. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of people, and we're in a new hotel in a new city, and it was intense. So Marie, you just literally just got back late last night. So tell me, what was your take since it was new for you?
I thought it was great. All the presentations were really good. I thought even more than the presentations was the energy of just the collective intent of it. I noticed as soon as I got there, I got really bowled over by all the energy, and it really immediately put me in the state of knowing what my weaknesses were and what my strengths were, and I had to work on it. So it was really good.
But I guess what it is you know, I guess most tarot readers are relatively solitary birds, I guess.
Yeah.
Not because we want to be, but because we don't run into a lot of other tarot readers. And if we do, you know, there's such a range of possibility of what a tarot reader does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll get some of that variety. We'll get back to you in a minute about that. You know, we're sort of bewildered and confused by you know, the great range. Yeah, it is incredible, though, to be around 150 people. The only thing we have got in common are tarot cards.
Mm-hmm.
But there was and what was interesting, though, is even though otherwise we were decidedly a diverse crowd.
Yeah, other than tarot readers.
Yeah,
it was doubly good for me because I got to be around artists as well.
That's right.
Which are also pretty solitary by nature. So
yeah,
and to me, it was great. It was great.
And it is, it's a serious commitment for any artist to, you know, to produce a tarot mm-hmm. deck, because it's a minimum of 78 images.
Right, and which is a lot.
Which is a lot, you know. You have to decide on some kind of consistent style or some mm-hmm. kind of consistent theme that makes, that has some kinds of unities between the cards, and there's, of course, there's the tradition. How much do you innovate and how much do you renovate?
Right. You know? And if you swing too far in any direction,
yeah, if you, you, know, if you become,
woe to you.
Well, if you become completely don't deal with the collectivity of tarot, I mean, people, then you become what they call an oracle artist.
Right, right.
And I noticed that most oracle cards are lesser in number,
yeah.
Like 40.
Or more. Yeah. People add on another suit or...
Yeah, actually, that's true. I do know of a tarot.
Yeah, I guess oracles do tend to be less, though, maybe because...
You run out of steam.
You say, oh, that's good enough.
Yeah. And, you know, and then there are other oracle cards that are related to tarot, like the mm-hmm. Madame Lenormand, who was a famous reader of tarot during the French Revolution. And she even read for Napoleon and was actually quite the, who was Napoleon's empress? She was patronized by sort of the way Hillary was patronizing Jean Houston. Oh, you don't know that?
No.
In the White House, Jean Houston has done very elaborate imaginative exercises. I mean, she was sort of the Eckhart Tolle of her
day. Oh my gosh, I'm definitely going to have to look that up.
You don't know her stuff?
No, never heard of it.
Yeah, she does good ones.
Is she an astrologer?
A little bit, but actually what she really does is she does this kind of trance work where you imaginatively enter into various literatures, but in a way that that galvanizes the whole brain. She actually started out as a psychedelic researcher. I may have the wrong last name for her, but she was very well known. But off back to tarot and the Reader Studio. That's what we're here for. Let's talk about it. Now, you weren't there for the advanced birth cards, were you?
No, I wasn't.
The Reader Studio is sponsored by one of the great unifying institutions in the tarot world, which is called the Tarot School. It was founded by, and it's pretty much run by, Ruth Ann and Wald Amberstone, two native New Yorkers who are both tarotists and are very different in their tarot approaches. Ruth Ann is intuitive, and she's sort of like a big world mother, who she's very psychic, very nice and comforting.
Mm-hmm.
And Wald is a abstract, completely committed to the deeper esoteric Kabbalistic aspects of the tarot, and also very deeply committed to the open-ended and the inability to have premature closure on the meaning of any of the cards or the significance of what they can do. And so his classes are quite innovative. They basically came out with a book, which is their notes. And their notes are only a small section of the actual classes that they do, called The Secret Language of Tarot, which was about a year's worth of classes done on the various symbolic elements that are found on tarot cards, specifically the Rider-Waite Coleman Smith deck, which is a famous deck that was produced about 1904, I think, in England.
I think the symbols they're discussing, though, and the book's about the deeper meaning of the symbols, even though it was based on the ones that are in the Rider-Waite, they should apply across the board.
Yeah, and yes, this is because Other artists use these symbols in other ways, with, you know, slightly different. They also add other symbols, but you're right. This the symbols would apply across mm-hmm. the board, and they also provides, as it were, a guide how to approach symbolic elements within a card. Even let's say, you know, you have bat wings as a mm-hmm. as which is not in the Rider-Waite things, but it is in some tarot decks. You can get a hint about how you might go about finding how the various cards that have prominent bat wings in them. You know, that was off the top of my head, folks. Or, you know, spider webs. We're talking about the witch tarot here. Or, you know, the Halloween tarot. Yeah. You know, or pointed little pointed hats, you know, little conical hats. You know, you got the dunce hat and you got mm-hmm. the witch's hat or brooms. You know, these are things that are not in the Rider-Waite symbols, are not prominent at all. In fact, they're not present in those cards at all. But you can take those different elements, and by following how Wald lays out the way he puts the different symbolic elements, you can start to see how they relate. You mm-hmm. can also start to look at the cards, how they relate symbolically. You know, what are the cards in a deck that, you know, have the broom in it? You know, so the symbolic elements that they deal with are the crowns, pillars, the rose and the lily, the paths, the mountains and crosses, the moon and the stars and the pools, the horses, suns and banners, armor, blindfolds and feathers, castles, clouds and gardens, rivers, towers, angels and temples. By the way, that list of symbolic elements that which they dealt with, and that was, as I said, a year's worth of class material mm-hmm. for the Tarot School. And what that included is, this is the basic notes that would be presentation. What it doesn't include is the elaborate discussion mm-hmm. of it that comes out of the classes. So what would be, a 20-minute read for a person reading this book was a 3.5-hour discussion mm-hmm. that the school itself presented, in which the first night, which there was pre-conference night, and they may actually eventually change the schedule to bring Thursday and bring things more into Friday, in other words, extend the thing. I don't know if they'll ever do that, but it's a possibility, because a lot of people are, more and more people are attending the pre-conference event, which is put on by Wald and Ruth Ann. And the one they did this year was called Advanced Birth Cards. Now, birth cards, what are birth cards? Well, we don't really have... Basically, birth cards are sort of like the equivalent of your sign in astrology. Mm-hmm. It's found out... It's done by a numerological reduction, which I won't go into. If you go to thetarotschool.com, you'll find a whole section on birth cards that you can read. And if you put it all together, it's about 50 pages of text. So the birth card information is pretty much out there. What were you? Do you know what your birth card number is?
I'm a chariot and tower.
You're a chariot. You're
seven.
A chariot and tower.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if I can find you here. Chariot tower. Okay, so you like risks reaching upward, and prefers the certainties of reaching inward. So you are, as it were, bifocal. So I get now. Let's relate this to. We'll get back to birth cards, folks, but I hate to be too didactic about these things. So we'll get back to birth cards, but I want to ask Marie about her creative process. She is in the process of completing her own original deck, which will be and already has been deeply embraced by the tarot community as one of the more original and intuitive decks available, where everybody sort of can't wait for you to complete it so they can get their hands on it and start reading with it. And who knows what will happen with that. So you've been working on this deck for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's your process? Does your process relate anything to this tower chariot thing here?
Probably. oh, gosh. My process has changed the whole time.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's evolved and changed, and I've tried all kinds of different stuff, and... Right now, Basically, what I do is when I'm working on a card, I try to put together all the information I have, you know, brainstorm, write out everything I know about it, start researching. I really like to know what other people think about it, what they've done. Just to me, I find truth in comparing everybody else's truths, you know, is a...
This is her tower reaching upward.
Yeah.
This is before it gets struck by lightning, though. Uh-huh. Okay.
Really, it is. It is like that. It's like I guess I climb up the tower as much as I can, and then after I have all that information, I usually start, right now, I start getting usually a mental image of it, or something will happen, or even I'll have a dream about it. I've really got much more in touch with my dreams during this process.
And again, that would be the reaching inward aspects of the integration.
Yeah, and then when I get the image, it would probably be like being struck by lightning. You know, when the here and there kind of equalize and...
And this is, how do I rise to the occasion and where am I going? So, yeah, so things are changed. Yeah, so it's...
And then I record it.
Yeah, and one of the things that will make her deck so a thing is that it does profoundly invoke an archetypal response that, you know, it's just, I mean, it really, you know, reading it is
I hope
gonna,
so, yeah. I think I've gone through different theories as I've gone. When I first started, I was just kind of dumb, I think. You know, I was just kind of doing what I was doing. And
well, that was 10 years ago.
Right.
You're
forgiven. And then I went through a whole stage where I was doing everything intentionally and thought I was in control of it all. And now I'm definitely at a point where, you know, I don't think I'm in control of it at all. And I'm just, you know, recording what's really out there. I really think there's you know, a bigger truth out there.
It's sort of like, you know, is the chariot driver directing the horses or the horses just pulling the chariot driver where they want to go?
Well, hopefully it's, you know, balanced.
Yeah, balanced.
Hopefully it's balanced.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I've had to get to. And that's, you know, something that's really important.
Yeah. And, we're going back to birth cards for a second now. So Marie is a tower chariot and I'm a sun wheel magician. Mm. You know, there's... 12, you know, 12, you know, the...
reductions you can get to.
Yeah, well, yeah, there are 12 reductions that are used, but the 9 of them are basically dual, where you have moon, hermit, tower, chariot, sun, strength, like. And 3 of them, starting with the sun wheel magician... And then Judgment and High Priestess and the World Empress represent are more complex, even though they're not. And the Sun Wheel Magician, which is the one that has the 3 cards in it, whereas the other ones don't, is the sun is optimism, enlightenment, you know, the complete sense of the world. I mean, that's sort of, I if you excuse me if I always sound like I'm pontificating upon the nature of the world. It's my son. I'm overly certain about things, and I shouldn't necessarily be that way. The wheel is drama, you know. It's change and chance, you know. And the wheel, in some ways, is the way we see everything. Everything is interconnected in a diverse and strange way. In this case, it was called drama. And the magician is a... represents the will. It represents the whole point of being alive. It's the first card in the major arcana.
You know, it actually reminds me a lot. I had one of my partners during the weekend was Joanna Colbert Powell.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Joanna
oh, that's
Colbert?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. She's the artist, right?
For the Gaian Tarot.
Yeah.
And 2 of the cards she drew for me were the sun and
right.
the wheel.
Right.
And in hers, the wheel has the sun in the middle with the moons going around the outside.
Uh-huh.
And just looking at you and thinking, comparing those two, the sun, the wheel, and the magician.
I look like a wheel, folks. As I was telling people, I really don't want to turn into a bowling ball.
But the sun is very much on the outside.
Yeah.
Where the wheel right. in her deck, the sun is on the inside,
uh-huh.
surrounded by a moon. And then, of course, the magician pulls those two things together.
Right.
and right. create something.
Yeah.
So one of them really go together well.
Yeah, one is sort of cyclic, you know, cyclic, you know, feminine time, which is moon time, and masculine time or sun time is more linear, though. Not, as we know, it's not completely linear. It's just a
steady.
Broader plane.
It's steady and universal.
Yeah. Yeah. There's greater contrast with the sun, whereas the moon is more graded, you know, gradations in terms of nuance. And, you know, now I've always been ambivalent about it. So the things that were dealt with in this class were, you know, so if you ever tell people, oh, you're a Capricorn or you're a Sagittarius or you're a Cancer or a Leo, what's your sign there?
Taurus.
You're a Taurus. Okay. That's a nice sight. Two little birds. Here we are, a little Capricorn, a little Taurus, trying to talk to each other. That's great. You know, and people either identify with their, you know, their astrological sign or they don't. It's kind of fun, too. But, you know, yeah, it's, you know, they're not taking it too seriously. Well, you know, you may or may not identify with things. Like, I don't particularly identify too much with the magician. I think the magician's a little egocentric. But it's not like I'm not egocentric. It's just that I probably don't like that about myself. So, you know, so I say the magician is the great narcissist of, which, by the way, is not otherwise held by tarot interpreters.
Have you ever looked at it in terms of like Joseph Campbell's writing, the magician?
Yeah,
to think of it as being like the wandering god that's manifest and goes around helping everybody. Kind of a thing.
Well, yeah, okay. I don't mind. That sounds good. Yeah. I don't mind. I don't mind being the wandering guy.
Well,
yeah, the trickster.
Picture like
you mean like the trickster,
like,
huh? Yeah. This is the positive
trickster.
Yeah,
kind of like the trickster or even like a Buddha nature, you know.
Yeah.
To be manifest on earth doing God's will, kind of.
Yep, that's me, folks.
So, you know, it's like the it's the first, you know, when the fool steps out, the hero, the first person he meets is this person who's going to give him you know, the map
the
where he's going, the tools,
and
he's going to need stuff like
things.
That. That would be like the magician.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Jean Noble thing. I think I told you this, didn't I?
I don't know.
Well, this is the unique thing. It's a Marseille deck. And again, this is a show slightly for tarot insiders. Can't explain everything. But the in this early version of the Marseille deck, which about 100 years before the regular ones have been were standardized, the dog, in this case, is usually snapping at the heels of the fools, is actually snapping at his well-revealed genitals, you know. And then if you notice in the magician, that the magician is holding up the severed whatever that of the fool, which I always thought is a interesting take on, you know, both on the magician and on the fool in terms of the nature of the journey that there is, a, you know, and it's, and this, by the way, is a symbology that's
it sounds like
only
a,
no, it's only explicit as far as I know in that one deck.
It sounds like Osiris, where that's the only part that got lost in
Got ate by the fish, and of course,
but
that,
they lost the goods.
But who, but who became the fish? The fish became Jesus and the resurrection and things. So it, it also, so it it forefended, it foretold a, a whole other version of the Osiris myth, which is the myth of Christ. For people who see the myth of Christ as mythically, you know,
I love how all that stuff flows one into the other, and
it,
well, it's, you know, it's the same story that just comes out of us,
right?
And so it should be with all the tarot decks too.
Yeah, and yeah, they're related and not related, and, and it's one of those things.
Well, it's an individual take or a cultural take or a, you know, religious take or all on the same thing.
Yeah. So one of the things we want to do here is to tell you a little bit more about this special class I was in. So the birth cards are known, and as I said, you can look yours up at tarotschool.com and find out about how to study the tarot, either as a correspondence school or as in our teleconferences. But here we go. People identify with their birth cards or like their astrological sign differently. So we went through what they called modifiers, which would be, you know, you accept your birth card, or you reject your birth card or aspects of your birth card, or you have, or you don't have any sense of identification with the birth card, so they leave you indifferent, sort of what they, you know. Or you accept parts of your birth cards and other parts you don't accept, like with me, with my problematic with the magician. Or you prefer your birth cards, all of them, and you like them completely. Then the next thing was taking two people's birth cards and seeing how they relate in a relationship mandala. Mm-hmm. And that's what we dealt with at great length in the class. And then at the last thing was introducing what I'm calling a birth card mandala configuration based on a the personal tree of life. Tree of life are 12 or 10 figures based on the classic Jewish Kabbalah tree of life. And so each birth card configuration can be compared to, can creates its own mandala. You have to have a sense of what the tree of life is, and each mandala is different and offers a lot of different possibilities. And as I said to Wald afterwards, I said, you know, Wald, I said, you know, you saved the most complex thing at last, but if we ever actually went through and studied in a systematic way those mandalas, all 12 of them, or each, all of the birth cards, we would be, it would take, in the way you normally do things, about 5 years to unpack the advanced stuff. So it was a very, very rich class in terms of implication. And also, and as far as the way a tarot person would use that is by identifying a person's birth card, it would be a way of starting to talk about character issues before a reading, which would deal with event or a problem or an issue like that. And there's different ways of doing that. One of the other classes I took, for instance, is was by Johanna. You just show me or pass me those papers you got in front of you there. Another version of doing the same thing was done in Johanna's class, which was an extra class that was offered late in the evening. It's one of the reasons why everybody completely fell asleep, in which she took the basic symbolic elements of fire, water, air, and earth, and created a characterological, again, using the day and month, year, and destiny number from one's birth year, birthday and birth year, and and then also the, and she also had another version, which we didn't explore, that's, though it's in her book. She was the, is the creator of the Sacred Rose Tarot. And that, again, is another characterological system that some tarots would use, that she did. These again are used usually as a way of getting a picture of what the person's about, what the dynamics may be in their life. They're similar to an astrological chart, not in content but in a stable form. In other words, there's something which you start with, and they're very complementary. A word to the skeptic. No, you don't have to believe any of this. But the fact of the matter is that when you are given a sort of, you're given an array and you say that, well, this array is you, and you look at it, you will find ways that it works for you. You'll also find ways that it won't work for you. But you'll, if you want to, if you look at it that way, and it works in that way, it's sort of like we're patterned creatures and we seek order. So when we're given a sense of order in some sort of way, we're going to make sense out of it one way or the other, because that's sort of that's how we do things. So in other words, the stuff works because we make it work, not just because that's the way we process information most sort of naturally. We seek to confirm knowledge. And the scientific methods, by the way, seeks to disconfirm knowledge. You know, this is why you have double blind tests is a way that this natural wanting to seek to confirm things is sort of, as they attempt to short circuit there, but even then they've noticed that that doesn't fully work. So back to what was at the Reader Studio. We just, so far we just talked about the pre-conference, which was always good. The Ruth Ann and Wald know how to teach a tarot class. Next we had Friday was the beginning of the actual event itself, and people registered and they went to the merchant fairs. Now you went to the merchant fairs. What was your take on that?
Good. It was good.
What did you see?
There was lots of art prints and handmade jewelry and
tarot cards galore.
Cards and books. Lots of books. I tend to think I have a lot, but there was a lot I didn't have. So
yeah.
Same with the tarot decks.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the one I picked up that I didn't see was Corin Kinner's new book on the tarot for beginners, and it was specifically dealt with predictive tarot, which I thought was kind of interesting. What's her inner take? And of course, her favorite book is The Tall Dark Stranger, which is how to read all the tarot cards in regards to romance, which always tends to be a question that tarot readers get something about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When am I going to meet my special someone?
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's going to be a short, white, somebody you know, familiar. So, and she's actually a very gifted thing. Corin Kinner, that's CorinKenner.com. You can find her on the internet, too. She also has a book coming out in a few months or next year on Tarot for Writers, and which was an online course that has gotten a lot of things. She's an exceptionally clear writer. So Corin Kinner was there. And what was your take with Cyril? I know you had Cheryl. What was your take with him?
I really enjoyed talking to him.
Okay.
For a lot of different reasons.
So why don't you give us a little insight about what you we're talking about?
Well, if you don't know, he's the artist of the Gilded Tarot and the Tarot of Dreams, and he's working on a new one right now. And he had a computer set up that was playing a movie that he's working on.
Yes,
for his new deck.
I saw the internet version.
Yeah,
YouTube version.
Right, and you can go on YouTube and see it, and it's
Yeah,
I think you can just search for Tarot and Chiro, C-I-R-O, and you'll find it.
Yeah.
And it was really good. And he had prints and, you know, all this stuff. Anyway, we talked about art a lot, publishing. He really gave me a lot of good information that made me feel less trepidation about publishing. And,
right.
He was just a really nice guy. And I know he was nervous about being there because he hadn't been around
Taroists.
Except for on the internet, which can get kind of rough. So, the fact...
most of the crazies seem to stay away from... Well, with the exception of me, the crazies tend to stay away from these events.
So, he got several standing ovations, which is awesome. It's awesome as an artist. You know, to me, just to see someone get their due, you know, to work real hard, and he clearly loves it, and he's... You know, he's really taking it to heart, you know, working on this stuff.
Yeah. The one he's doing now, which I guess is called The Legacy of the Divine or something.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Is sort of an outer space version. It's sort of set in a mythical world about what was left behind by a civilization that existed, you know, somewhere in the long ago,
it looked to me like it was a standard type tarot, but he's going to write a fictional book with it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, as a way of as a commentary on the cards, it'll be fictionalized or made into a narrative. That's actually healthy.
Yeah,
because one of the things that I think that one of the innovations of tarot that that is going under some metamorphosis now. Lots of people are working on it. We don't know exactly what will get produced yet. Is what I, you know, there's a thing in scholars that's called being a strong reader.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a strong reader isn't just somebody who can read a lot of books and remember them. A strong reader is somebody who reads a lot of books and then somehow enters into an imaginative process with the content of those books that transforms the knowledge.
Hmm.
A classic strong reader was Martin Buber. So if you read Martin Buber about and he gives you certain sources, if you go back to the sources and try to find what he's talking about in his book that he's claiming he got out of that other book, you won't find it. Because what he's done is he's transmutated the information he got into others. By the way, this is what tarot readers do with their cards. They take all this information and all these suggestions from the various books they may or may not read and from the images that they may or may not be paying attention to when they look at the card. And they, you know, and they come to a sense of what the card means in the particular situation that they're in at that moment. So that's kind of a strong reading. And I think in some ways it would be interesting to bring this imaginative participation more into our interpretations of the cards. This is people writing interpretations mm-hmm. of the cards, you know, how to approach cards. That we become more oriented to the process of reading, which is an imaginative one.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of offering a kind of flat and, you know, list of, you know, synonyms of
right.
what the cards
might mean. Right, it gives it more life.
Yeah, and, definitely. You know, and it's a big challenge because it's the recipe book versions of the tarot, the little white book version of tarot are there, and they're worth looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And for beginners and whatnot, but eventually we need to probably invent other styles of literature to deal with the complexities and the multivalence, as I like to use my favorite word, the dream aspects of reading.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the opening session was the foundation reading. How was your foundation reading?
Awful.
You mean, okay.
When I arrived there,
well, you don't have to say who you read for because we should allow some anonymity
yeah.
here.
When I first got there, I was so bowled over, and I've been thinking about this, you know, ever since I threw the thing, and ever since I left, I was so bowled over by all the energy there. It just really knocked me out, and I was drawing a blank, total blank. And you know, I can usually flip out any card or, you know, any symbol or anything that even reminds me of a card, and I can go on for days on it. I mean, I can make people glaze over having to listen to me. I could just go and go and go, and here I am, a blank. It was just blank. It didn't look like it was related to anything. It was just like nothing there. And,
so you had a hard time doing a reading for somebody
I did
else.
At first, and then...
How many cards did you draw for that 15-minute reading?
Just three.
Okay.
And there was nothing there. I totally shut down. I had totally shut down. I think I felt just so much energy. I just, you know, closed up, and it took me for the rest of the week. And, you know, I figured out that's something I do on a smaller scale anyway, so it's something I need to work on. But over the weekend, I finally got back into it, and by the end, everything was okay. And
I guess since we're going a little slow here as far as covering this event, and we mm-hmm. haven't really got to a lot of things yet. Okay, one of the things is the foundation reading is something we return to at the end of the event.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what was your experience of the return to the end of the event?
Good, good.
So you were
not
able
only,
to read.
And, yeah, not only was I able to read it, and it worked out really well. The one done for me, too, which made sense the first time, because you took the exact same reading and then reinterpreted it.
Yeah, in other words, you reread the cards, the same cards that you got the first time for the same people, you know, after the weekend, you know, basically, you know, a day and a half later.
Mm-hmm. So,
and it gives you an idea of, it gives you a sense of how you... through the immersion process have become better readers.
Yeah. And so the last one, the reading for me, really was, what's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of the word, but it was really deep. You know, it really affected me, and I actually was tearing up, and I looked around. There was a lot of other people who were, too.
Yeah.
And that's where I think it wasn't necessarily the presenters or anything else. I think it was just the energy that,
It released the associative natural reading abilities of the readers. Now, I had a newbie reader. She was not that. She had been studying the tarot for a while, but she didn't feel real confident as a reader. She did very good, by the way. Initially, she drew 5 cards, which I thought was a little excessive for a 15-minute reading. I actually asked her, which is unusual for me. I asked her actually a real question, which was something like, what's the best way for me to approach, losing weight? You know, I'm not particularly interested in dieting, but how should I? I got to lose weight, folks. Otherwise, I ain't going to be around here much longer. So, so I asked her this. This is one of the few real questions I asked all weekend. the rest of them were, pretty insipid, and so were the answers. It's interesting that I asked her this because she told me serendipitously that she had just gotten her chit from Weight Watchers for having lost 10% of her body weight. And her head was really into this. I mean, really into this process, which I couldn't have known, until she told me. I mean, we did not know each other. We're complete strangers, never met. I decided for her that I would do, mainly because we went all over a little with her interpretation of the cards initially. And I said, we'll keep it simple. So I says, I'll do a 1-card draw, and if necessary, we'll do a little commentary draws. So the 1-card draw that we got for her was the death. wonderful. But she knew enough about tarot not to freak out.
Letting go away, yeah.
Yeah. And she had plenty to reflect on, about retiring in the near future and changing. The commentary cards we got was the King of Cups and the Page of Cups, and the King being the past and the Page being the future. So I said the night journey had to do with a renewal of the youthfulness of one's outlook on the world. That's a very simple reading of these cards. And we spent a long time on what the nature of the night journey, which is partly what death is about. It's a very deep card. I got the Tower and I got the World in my reading, by the way. The World is where I was at, and the Tower was where I would be at if I didn't bother to get on my diet.
Oh, my gosh.
So I got to start exercising. Okay, enough of the, that was the foundation reading. Then we had our session number 1 with Kevin Quigley. A theatrical guy. He's an artist and works in the theater in various capacities in Manhattan. Highly charismatic, very fun guy. And I will allow you to give a sense of what you thought of his presentation, which is quite complex, actually. But go on.
He went through a lot of elemental theory, some Kabbalah. What do you call the
anthroposophy?
Yeah, and the four natures.
Yeah, temperaments.
Oh, the temperaments. That's right.
Was it a caloric and phlegmatic and sanguine
and
melancholic?
Melancholic. Yeah, and after that, I kept looking at people, thinking, "Hey, they're being melancholic."
You seem phlegmatic to me.
That's what I was.
I was phlegmatic, and I'm probably melancholic myself, only because I'm like Capricorn, folks.
I liked it. It went over a lot of basics, which was good to start out with.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went on to doing some readings which used the elements into the readings, which I thought was pretty good. So
And the other thing he did is he dealt with the elements of starting with the four worlds. He showed how the four worlds generate the tenfold tree of life through Jacob's ladder. The tarot people know what I'm talking about, and the rest of you will just have to wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And, as he did a lot of stuff, which I call, basic stuff, mm-hmm. that most star artists should have known that stuff.
Yeah.
And some people that I talked to afterwards found it a little rough to take all that information, and it was hard. Not because they didn't know it or something, but it was sort of like, either I know it too well, or there's, you know, I need to do something. It was antsy. It's a hard, kind of hard way to find the correct balance. After Kevin Squiggly's show, and the other thing is, you're the opening act. Opening acts are always sort of hard.
Yeah.
And I think that, because my blog that I wrote on this thing I was a little rough on him, only in the sense that, I was comparing it with last year. And see, and here's the thing, is that I went to, you know, I was there the year before, so mm-hmm. I kind of knew what to expect. And I wasn't roughing any of the presenters last year because I didn't have anything to compare them with. Now, unfortunately, I can compare them with last year's. And I was also I'll get into another gripe about this in a little later, but this is purely subjective on my part. Next, we had the cocktail party.
Mm-hmm.
Did you stick around for that?
Yeah.
How drunk did you?
I don't drink.
Oh, you don't drink?
Nope.
Well, I don't drink either. Actually,
and fruit.
Actually, don't pass this on to the hotel. But I had a few drinks now and again, but somehow they never got on my bill. And considering what my bill was, I was kind of happy about that. Whosever bill they got on, thank you very much. but I had a nice time, sort of. Visiting and schmoozing with people. In some ways, it's because I'm real close to some people because we do some. I do this Taro teleconference on Wednesdays. That deals with meditations on the Taro, and we are all connected. All four of us connected there, and so we were hanging out together. And the only problem with hanging out with people you know is that you don't get a chance to meet new people.
Yeah. There were so many people there.
And I really wished I had an opportunity to say, you know, apparently a lot of people knew who I was,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I didn't know who they were. people would come up to me and say, oh, you're that guy. I said, you know, gee whiz, what did I do, you know? They're not listening to this radio show, I can tell you that much. But the... I'm not only big, I'm with a big beard. I had the biggest beard there. I kind of like that idea. I've tried to get this thing longer than I've ever had it before. I've still got a little ways to go. Then we had the celebrity study groups, and mm-hmm. I basically, and you didn't do any of the study groups or the celebrity fair. Celebrity mm-hmm. Psychic fair is where you could get some of the great legendary mentors of the tarot. Mary Kay Greer is a wonderful tarot reader. She's a wonderful lady. We had an opportunity to schmooze a little bit, actually before this thing even got started. And all of her books on tarot are very much worth reading and are considered fundamental and foundational. Another great legendary person who comes to this is Rachel Pollack. Who and I crossed a few times, and she's always playful in a wonderful way.
Mm-hmm.
Temperamentally, how people read tarot is really sort of all over the map. There's been a tendency, at least in the two reader studios that I have attended, that what has dominated the thinking about reading is the psychotherapeutic reading.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you're helping somebody deal with an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so you deal with issues like transference. That was something that was in Eleanor Greenberg's presentation from the year before. Or we'll get there in due course, there was James Wells' session,
mm-hmm.
which was the last session that was done. By the way, the sessions, Kevin Quigley's session was 3.5 hours.
Right.
And having three and a half sessions with 150 people jammed into a room, even though relatively comfortably into the room, is a pretty heavy feat to do and mm-hmm. to find the right balance of presentation and interaction. So the psychic fairs was getting readings from celebrity and legendary tarot readers. So you can say they read for me, and maybe even pick up a way of how to read for them. Saturday is the big day. If that was Friday, it was the opener. Saturday is the really big day. It's the whole conference. It's the heart of the conference. It's also very intense. And I, by the way, was so zoned out by Saturday that I didn't write about it until Sunday. And, of course, by then I almost forgot most of it, as I wrote in my blog. So the opening session was with Robert Place.
It was at 7:30 in the morning, and yeah. I wasn't staying at that hotel, so.
Couldn't get there, yeah. Did you get a chance to visit with Robert otherwise?
Just maybe in passing. Yeah, just in passing.
You didn't pick up a copy?
Which is too bad. I'm a big fan of his. I've always loved his work.
Did you pick up a copy of his Alchemical Tarot? You have the Earth.
I have it.
But yeah, but you
have the older one.
Yeah, the older one. The newer one is better. Of course, that's because I have the newer one.
I always like the old one. Well, everybody's saying they really like the new one.
Well, the reason why is some of the color mixture is bad. They don't have that kind of weird rim that they put around it, which the publisher
was. Was there a weird rim? Yeah. I just remember the two columns off the top of my head.
Yeah, and he's got an extra lover card, which is sort of X-rated.
Yeah, I heard about that too. That was all the talk.
Yeah, right. As I said, the usual lover card is drawing down the moon. I says this is the moon. This is the moon. Downed. Okay.
The sun and the moon, down and dirty.
Downed, yeah, exactly. All righty. So then the session was with Thalassa. Now, Thalassa is the founder of BATS, BATS, which is the Bay Area Tarot Symposium, which takes place once a year, usually in October, the first week of October in San Francisco, and physically takes place at my old personal old church where I used to hang out forever, the Unitarian Universalist Church of San Francisco, First Unitarian of San Francisco. And, and she's, a theatrical person, and I hung out a little bit in that community when I was in San Francisco. Well, she was like running into a long-lost cousin or at least a native, so I felt quite comfortable with her style, her humor, and her playing with that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For the life of me, I don't remember one thing she did.
I didn't at first either, but hers has really been soaking in. I think I might have got the most from hers, because the thing she was talking about was based on her history and theatrics
right.
and stuff
right.
was using your body first
right.
to move the rest of you along right. with what you wanted to do. So, just to make it really simple, if you wanted to be happy, then, physically act happy and it would start to fall in line.
Yeah, your mind will follow your soma.
Right. And so she had us do exercise where we pick our favorite and our most hated card out of the deck. And then we had to partner up and tell our partner the card we loved the most, how we hated it, and try to act like we really hated it, and vice versa with the other one. So you found yourself taking this card that you usually really despise, and after talking about how much you love it, you start, there is some good things about this card, and you start really, and you could see how just the act of physically, moving forward in this way can start to change your mind and change your reality about something. So
yeah, I remember that one of the things I blogged about was I said, yeah, well, I know that, and that's good to know. Mm-hmm. And the practice of that makes sense. But the talking about that is sort of wore thin on me. I wasn't interested in the ideology of it as I was, though I do recognize the solidity of like this embodiment of making your body if you smile you will feel happier than if you just allow yourself to frown because you think that's the way you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that this is true. We should never see a profoundly depressed person try to smile. It's painful.
Yeah.
But it can happen. It's very hard for them to do, though. But that's another story. Okay, so now she did another one, too, which was having people, just imagine cards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We flipped over a card in our head.
Yeah, we flipped over a card on our head, and so, you know, suddenly I'm flipping over, and goes, oh, you got the devil for you right now. Okay, mm-hmm. You know, so you're really dealing with some serious attachment issues. Okay, you know, so you know, you know, so you just, you know, whatever card pops into your head first. And this is sort of, as Allen Ginsberg used to say around poetry, first thought, best thought. Of course, not this. It might work even better with some rewriting, but the be that as it may. We had the lunch break. You know, I also have to really say
she did one other thing.
Okay,
she had us get oracular. She had us.
Explain this again. I don't remember this.
We had to go deep within ourselves and get a message for somebody else.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it had nothing to do with a tarot card. Just get a message,
right?
And so I thought that was really interesting, and I think something like that is good because alone, you know, or maybe in your regular life, something like that's hard to do. But when someone tells you to do something like that, and you're in this environment, you can do it. You know, you do it because you're told to do it, and I think it's really helpful, and just to trust. Trust what you see is really important, and that is something that...
Yeah. And I think the other thing I just want to mention is that one of the... I wasn't at this thing, but one of the Friday night classes was mm-hmm. Was presented by Prudence Thierot, and it was Develop Your Intuitive Skills.
Mm-hmm.
And though it doesn't say it here, what she actually did was she got people to do psychometry.
I heard about that.
And
a lot of people thought that was good.
Yeah, and the reason why is that psychometry is where you get impressions, psychic impressions from objects.
Hmm.
And the thing is that people are usually astounded that they can do this. And, of course, the secret about psychometry is the thing about it is that a lot of people can do it. They just haven't been given permission to try.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And you know, it's a very easy psychic exercise that is taught in good psychic schools very early on, because it's one of the ways that people become aware that, you know, it's sort of like the entire world is haunted.
Mm-hmm.
It's like our psychic impressions and our emotions leave a residue around the objects that we're on and the things we touch and the things we feel. And they take on a patina of feeling, and that other people can feel this feeling if you just merely, and you can isolate it and say, this is what this is going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Person's happy, sad, feeling this way, feeling that way, or even to the point of telling a story. It's sort of like, as I said, the whole world is haunted, but. You know, it's the thing with hauntings or super ghosts is that they may be traumatic, and you know,
that really fits in my worldview. The way I see everything has a soul, be it, you know, alive or inanimate. And after you get to a certain, you know, everything goes up in, I don't know if levels is a good word, but everything shifts from physical to spiritual, and somewhere in that in between place, it all commingles. So, we're definitely connected to inanimate objects as well.
Yeah, and you know, I'm really glad that, you know, this happened. One of the next session, by the way, I just want to alert our listeners that we're going to be going over the hour this night, because we actually want to finish. We won't be going too much over, but we'll be going over about 10 minutes or so. Mainly so that we can actually finish this account of the Reader Studio and not have to short shift some of the presentations and our reflections mm-hmm. on it. So it's going to be a little longer than an hour. And I'll be breaking for station identification in a moment, so you know where that you're listening to WCOM in Carborough, COMLP. We're in Chapel Hill in Carborough. This is your community radio station. It's at www.communityradio.coop. That's COOP. You can listen to us live streaming anytime. We're on 24 hours a day. We're all a completely and utterly volunteer-driven radio station. I'm Paul Nage, and this is Touchstones that you've been listening to, a special edition of Touchstones that is dealing with this year's 2008's Reader's Studio, a convention of tarot readers. And I guess I have to confess, I read the cards myself now and again.
You have to confess that.
Okay. I don't know, why am I going to this convention?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're on Saturday, and we're actually at the midpoint of this thing, and then we have our last big presenter. Thalesa's program was 3.5 hours,
right.
You know, and she was really funny. I think I remember her humor more than I remember, as I said, and I'm really glad you reflected on her program, because it does, you know, jostle my memory. Mm-hmm. And I hope you, you know, go on to the message board at meetup.com, the Raleigh-Durham group.
Yeah, I think I will.
And add your own insights, you know, which will, you know, I can't really say why I blocked everything like that. It's probably because, you know, I don't really need anything. I don't need to know stuff about psychic embodiment and stuff like that. I'm just interested in
the deck cards.
Okay. So, last but not least was James Wells. James Wells is a sweet guy, cherubby guy, who lives up in Toronto. He's a Canadian. He's very accessible. I give ways you can reach him in my blog, which is on meetup.com, at the Raleigh-Durham meetup message board, where we talk, where we're going to be discussing the Reader Studio for several weeks, I hope. And from my point of view, just in terms of what I remember and so forth, it was the most integral and most solid way of, you know, learning how to read and dealing with an issue. And all he basically dealt with was, you know, how to suss through the questions that that you may have as a reader, or your querent or your client has as a coming to you. They have an issue, and it's sort of a way of, even before you start reading the cards, you know, you get them to process about what is the real question that they deal with. Mm-hmm. So what was your take with James Wells' presentation, Marie?
I loved it. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Not just in the information he gave, but the way he was able to bring everybody together. He had a really calm energy. I think everybody else was pretty kinetic.
Yeah.
And with him, it just really, he calmed everybody down and contained everybody.
It was that Reiki energetic flow that he holds. Yeah.
It was
the right amount of didactic presentation,
right,
with participation.
Uh-huh. Everybody was working. Like, everybody understood. Everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm sure everybody got something out of it.
Yeah, that was true. So do you remember some of the things that he did bring up that around the issue of the question?
He had everybody come up with a question, you know, your own question, which nobody knew was going to be public in just a moment. So a lot of people had kind of embarrassing stuff, but and you had to go out and get a bunch of you brainstormed on it for a few minutes, and then you went out and you had other people give you their questions they could come up with about your topic. And so you ended up with all these different questions that you then had to solidify down, and you basically ended up coming up with your own spread based on all these questions, which you've really thoroughly turned around and looked at from every angle by this time, and then do a reading on it. And it was really, really good. Really good. So is it psychological? I don't know. I don't know that it was just psychological.
Well, yeah, it was.
That part is. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, as I don't know if they were part of his presentation or just something that came up in conversation later, but, you know, he had the thing where he said that he was just talking to somebody,
mm-hmm.
you know, and after trying to go through some of this question process, they got what they needed.
Yeah.
And they said, well, I don't need the reading. You know,
right.
I'm only talked to you for 3 minutes. Yeah, but I got what I needed, you mm-hmm. know, and, you know, and he says, well, you know, you still owe me the, you know, $120 or whatever it is the reading's going to be. He says, oh, it's OK with me, you know, because I got what I needed. You know? So But, you know, and James is, you know, in that way represents probably what most of us would aspire to be, which is integral. He's definitely integral in the sense that there's a great integrity with his own practice, his own energy, his own presence, his own understanding. He's presenting himself. Now, you probably, I don't know if you remember not how negative I was. I questioned, I jumped out of it at the end. The you know, I, at this point, you know, I'm getting...
You were being contrary.
Yeah, that's true. and I do admit I am a natural contrarian to your great truth. But I was also getting a little weary of the psychological, psychotherapeutic paradigm. And actually, I'm not claiming her as my source. In other words, I'm not trying to foist it off on her. But you know, this is my own... I'll own my own... negativity, but somebody, and when discussing this with people afterwards and in other places, you know, the tarot community and this tarot community, is, we're a very, very diverse crowd. We have people who really are modern-day skeptics types, you know, scientists who really live in the modern world, and they understand... tarot as a kind of reframing technique, and they understand it in a that's, you know, arbitrary in a sense, but being forced with arbitrary symbols, you can still make sense out of them because of the way we approach
things.
I
hope this isn't taken offensively, but isn't psychology a pretty soft science?
It is
to begin
a soft
with?
Science,
So, I mean, I don't think anybody can explain how all of psychology works.
Yeah, and you know, for that matter, physics seems to be a soft science these days. That's definitely a permeable science. But the no matter how abstract it is, but the point being is that that's, you know, that's one out of two. I don't think there were too many people who represent these things in the hard and fast ways.
There are people out there. There are definitely people out there who do see it as hard and fast tarot.
I don't know how many were at this conference.
Yeah, I don't know how many were there.
But, you know, but I guess people keeping their own counsel tight, or their cards tight to their chest. And nobody's playing poker that much this year. You know, tarot, poker, you know, where all the major arcana are wild. You know?
There's a whole spectrum of people into tarot for all kinds of different reasons and purposes and interests and, you know.
And one of the things that I haven't seen represented in the tarot school or in the reader studio yet, and I think it's just the luck of the draw. I don't think, knowing Wald's own interest in the Kabbalah, I don't think it's specifically, in other words, I don't think he's limiting it this way. But... the in terms of who's selected, but the thing is there's an incredible diversity of the way people interpret the cards and the way they approach them. The two tarot reader studios that I've been to, they've tended to be a little bit psychological stuff, and so that was my psychology thing. You know, going to the tarot with a question is, you know. It's sort of like prayer, you know, and actually maybe someday one of the tarot presenters will deal with praying with the deck, you know, because there's several ways that you go to prayer. I mean, they're classic. These are traditional ways. You go to prayer in need when you need. This is the question stuff that I think that.
Communication with the divine.
Yeah. And you, then you also sometimes go to prayer and exaltation, you know, when you're thankful. And then sometimes you go, you go to prayer when you're perplexed. You know, and this is not a need. This is just, just a wonderment. You know, there's a variety of ways that people approach prayer. And they're all valid, you know, depending on where we're at. And, you know, and of course, there's the other way is that sometimes we go to prayer because that's the way we know to become aware of the divine working through us. The amount of synchronicity in our little event is always fun. It shows you, I mean, it's going to happen in a group that's this charged. But where it came through in a way which was present for everyone was the accidental way that the gifts were given out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, here we had this serendipitous thing. Basically, in order probably to keep us in the room for all those long hours, you know, Ruth Ann pulls out of the chalice, has everybody's name in the chalice. I think my name was in the chalice. It didn't get called this year. I think you need to have more presents next year. If you're going to have more people, you got to have more presents. Okay, but the, so I think my name was in the chalice. But you got something, didn't you?
Mm-mm.
No, you didn't get anything
Mm-mm.
either? Huh. The so people's names were drawn, and you know they got a chance to get all sorts of really neat gifts, mm-hmm. and there were some good gifts that were given, you know, artist sessions, special readings, all sorts of things, and it was really wonderful. And it was serendipitous one. I thought the one with the wand, of course,
right. I've thought of that a few times since.
Yes.
That was great.
Garnet, who is a not only a tarotist but a craft worker and a witch of all trades. Who I think she's in Florida. I'm not sure, but she's available through the internet too. She had made a special wand, and she was working with a friend, and it was going to give it away as a. As a gift, and her friend said, "Well, you know, this is great. Would you want it instead of giving you the gift?" She says, "Well, if I should get it, I'll get it, you know." And of course, whose name comes up when during the raffle? But the woman who had this thing with. So, and there were a few other synchronicities mm-hmm. events, and I'm sure even more so if you got down to actually talking to people.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of the meeting with people and seeing people coming across.
One of the things that happened with me was on the last day when everybody was going home. My husband was supposed to come and pick me up with the kids at, I think, 3 o'clock is when we let out. Mm-hmm. And he hadn't shown up yet. And it was like 4:15 and almost everybody was gone. And I was stuck, but I was hanging out with Ciro Marchetti and mm-hmm. Johanna,
Sherman.
I can't pronounce her name, Gargiulo, is it? Sherman.
Yeah.
And
you know, I just skip her, Gargiulo.
Yeah.
Go to Sherman.
And some really nice.